VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and joining us on a bumper panel this week are not one, but two former Premier League footballers, or Premier League stars, as I think by contract some newspapers have to refer to them as. They are Tony Cascarino and the excellent James Scowcroft. Down the phone, we have Rory K. Smith as well. Because of the situation right now in central London, people may come and go. We are taping this as live, so who knows who might drop in or might drop out in the course of this podcast. There's always one. And like, as I said, as live. And who is it whose phone was still on?
Tony Cascarino.
53 going on 14.
I'd say I'm a little bit older than 14.
16, 17. Yeah. You can get into pubs. Coming up, we'll be reviewing West Ham versus Manchester City. We'll talk a little bit of goal line technology. But first, let's focus on the Emirates. Cass, I'm going to start with you. Arsenal and Chelsea, 18 minutes in, Per Mertesacker gets a red card. Arsene Wenger, he actually saw it this time, but he's not really convinced. Do we need to argue that it was a red card and a sending off? I didn't quite see what the debate was, but...
Look, it's the type of challenge that Costa is looking to go across a defender, and if you slightly get caught, minimal contact, you go down, and then it's no debate. It becomes, like you said... Why is there an argument over a red card? Because the laws clearly state that final defender, which he was, and he was away at goal, and the referee saw it as a foul, it's a no-brainer. He has to send him off.
Well, could he have seen it as not a foul?
Well, look, Costa's doing what many forwards do in the game. They will go down in certain situations. They'll go across your line. So
you're taught to do, right? You go across his line.
You know, the forward looks for the defender, but, you know... I think most players, certainly you always go back and you always reflect back of what players would do, try and stay on the feet and try and score. It's not in the fault of the modern day footballer. They would go down, sending off, and he gets his goal anyway. Because like always, I think he did spoil the game. But that's the bigger picture. But the right decision was made.
Anybody would argue that it was a wrong decision?
No.
I think he's clever, isn't he? Like Cass says, as soon as you go across him, you're asking him a massive decision, aren't you, Tim? Yeah, you're going to stay on your feet, are you going to tackle me? And two things happen. He either goes down or he takes him out of the game by going across him, and then it's almost impossible to get back round then, isn't it? So it's almost...
You would have done exactly what Diego Costa did, right?
But I'm not sure I would have gone down, but I don't think you can really blame him. It's poor defending. Arsenal have got far too high a line.
So, I now realise you guys weren't defenders, but you watched defenders, but is once... Mertesacker was in that position because of some of the dubious positioning and the ball's gone through. Is there a way he could have defended it differently? Could he have tried to maybe chase Costa and try to shepherd him away? Or was at that point it just would have been a clean run onto the keeper?
Well, I think you've got to be 99% sure that you're going to get the ball. Because if you don't get the ball, you're in A, you're out of the game. And B, probably going to get sent off if you touch him, really. So I think you stay on your feet and then you let him, because Koscielny wasn't too far away. You've got checking goals.
I mean,
so it's still got a little bit to do, Costa. Yeah.
And if you give up a goal, more importantly, it's 11 versus 11.
It's decision-making, isn't it? And you've got a millisecond to make
Anybody
decisions.
Know why he looked across the line? what who he was looking at?
He wants offside, doesn't he?
And so he thinks that by looking, he's going to get offside? I mean, or is that just an instinctive?
Yeah, because instinctive thing.
It's, we say it's instinctive, but I haven't seen that happen too many times where somebody... It looked as if like it broke his stride and messed up his coordination to me. Right, well, no, we'll ask Mertesacker when we next have him on. Rory, okay, so center back gets sent off. You have to put on another central defender because it's written in the laws of football that you must play with two center backs always and everywhere. So Gabriel comes on, and there's an uproar because he takes off Giroud. Now, is it fair to really have a go at him over this? I mean, you can kind of see what he was trying to do, right, taking off Giroud?
Yeah, I think the logic that he offered was that you need to, if you've got 10 men, you need to play on the counter-attack a little bit more. You tend to cede kind of territory and possession in the game. So you need pace, and the pace is better represented by Walcott and Joel Campbell than it is by Olivier Giroud. So I think there is a logic to it. I think we think too often about right and wrong decisions, to be honest. I think that often managers make what they think is the least worst decision. And I think that either way, if you'd taken off Campbell, then you could easily have made the case, Arsenal took off one of their more creative players. They took off someone who could have created a chance or gone up front for them. If you take off Walcott, obviously you're losing all that pace. If you take off Giroud, you're losing your kind of point man. There wasn't a perfect thing to do. And I think in the moment, Wenger felt that it was the least worst option. Whether that was the right call in that situation, I don't know. I don't think there is a right answer. I think what changed it, what made it the wrong answer, was the fact that Chelsea scored 2 minutes later. And I think if they hadn't done that, and Arsenal go on to win it, or draw it, which is perfectly feasible if Chelsea don't score, then people maybe say, all right, Wenger got that call right. You can understand why he did it, you can understand why he's been criticised, but I think it's all been a little bit blown out of proportion. It's very easy to criticise decisions like that in hindsight.
I thought it was the right decision, actually. I mean, if you don't take off Giroud, then obviously you lose the counter-attacking option because Walcott has to start from, your fast players have to start from deeper. Also, how often do you see a center forward up front? And yeah, I'm asking you, Cass, because you may have done this in some games where you're down to 10 men for most of the game and you're up front on your own and people are just lumping balls to you and you're getting the bejesus kicked out of you and you keep losing the ball and everything. You got to run around like a maniac. It's not fun or effective, is it?
You could look at every position in the park of who's going to be the most painful, the one you take off. I personally think you take off your worst defender, the player that you might think you carry slightly.
He would have taken off Walcott then.
Well, if he's the worst defender.
Well, who's worse than Walcott?
Well, you could look at
it. It is Walcott or Campbell, right?
Yeah, well, I personally do that because you
Who would you have taken off in that
level? I would have even considered Ozil. Because I think he's a poor defender without the ball. Now, don't get me wrong, I want to play him every day of the week. But I think he's one of the poorest defenders. And when you're going against Chelsea and you've gone down to 10, if you've got sort of a 9.5, 9.75, because Ozil is incredible on the ball. And also, if you take off Giroud, Ozil doesn't have an option with a pass so easy because he's lost his centre-forward, who he likes to feed into the ball and get returns from. So I would have took a... Not because he's not a great player, but because I just think it makes you harder to beat.
That's interesting.
That's my gut feeling.
And then Matic gets sent off and it's 10v10 and you wish you would have had...
But that didn't happen.
Good point. Sorry, Rory, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a logic to that, isn't it? Surely, and Cass made the point in the paper today, that Arsenal never really look... Whenever they go down to 10 men, which happens pretty much every time they play Chelsea and on certain other occasions, you never get the impression Arsenal are going to win because Wenger doesn't seem to... He makes changes, so he brings on Gabriel as he has to, like you say, but rather than just saying, right, they've got one striker, we'll play with one central defender... But you never get the impression that he's necessarily thought the second step of the move. So surely in that situation, I'm not a manager, I'm not even a player, but surely in that situation, you look at it and think, right, so we need to find a way to pose a threat despite this numerical disadvantage. How are we going to do that? We're going to play on the counter-attack. So what's the best way to play on the counter-attack? It's with pace, but with somebody in the middle. So you still need Giroud, you still need Campbell and Walcott. So maybe Kaz is right. Maybe despite the fact that he is Arsenal's best player, Ozil has to come off to make the team as dangerous as it can be in that situation. I think there is a logic to that.
Isn't Arsene Wenger's thought that they're going to play, right, Chelsea can have the ball, we're going to sit down and we're going to counter-attack, we're going to get players up the pitch very, very quickly, and Giroud's not that kind of player? Was that what he's thinking?
That's exactly his thinking. And I don't know. I mean, we can all see the pros and cons. I want to chuck this forward, Scholl. We have this idea in our minds... And it's one of those sort of stereotypical truisms that Arsenal are somehow soft and southern, that they'll just kind of collapse when the going gets tough because, you know, Tony Adams and Martin Keown aren't there anymore, and that they'll just shrivel up. they're not doing much to disabuse this notion. I mean, I still have them as favourites, but goodness me, like, this is just a really bad game, wasn't it?
I wouldn't say soft is the right word. I think in previous years, they just haven't had the quality that other teams have had.
They haven't had the quality, really?
Yeah, in key areas. In key areas, I would say.
Like where?
Up front.
Centre forward, definitely.
Oh, another Giroud hater.
No, more. You need more than Giroud.
Giroud, three or four centre forwards.
Well, you need three.
Giroud, Alexis Sanchez, Walcott. You need more than that.
Well, they're wide players.
And don't say that to Theo Walcott.
You'll be upset.
I wouldn't have considered. Were they really in the race last year to win the league? You're saying they were when they were. I didn't think they were in contention.
No, but we've seen year after year where they
yeah, we're going back before Sanchez and Ozils and whoever you want to mention. There's been Nicholas Bentner play up front.
But yeah. they had the big hole in central midfield for a long time as well, didn't they? That was the thing. Before Crocoland sort of emerged, they had that massive hole in central midfield. Yeah. They didn't have the authority in the centre. That was their problem. There was an issue before Mertesacker and Tuchelny's partnership. There was an issue with central defence. They have always had one kind of fatal flaw. This is the most complete they've been, I think. But they're only where they are. Dicko's said it in the paper. He's nailed it this morning, that normal decent season in the Premier League, this is a sort of decent Arsenal team. They're no better than they were last year, not really. Everyone else is imploded.
Do you really think they're not any better?
No, I think they are better than what they were last year. I think certain players have improved.
Fullbacks, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, more to the point, when Coughlin is and Cazorla are in there, no disrespect to Flamini and Ramsey, and Ramsey
that
can
makes
play
a
different role.
Yeah,
yeah. When Cazorla does his passing Pirlo type role in central midfield.
His best season.
Yeah.
Has he been here three seasons now?
Yeah, but there's all the hipster types which will tell you that Ozil's actually been great all the time and we've all just been too thick to see it.
Who says this?
You don't read some of our fellow columnists say that, but yeah, go ahead. All right, well, let's cut to the chase then. Cass, percentage chance that Arsenal win the title?
Where the bookies are, just over even monies.
You still have them at right around 50%?
I'd say 45-40, but a very good chance to win the league.
Well, interesting.
Well, they've got.
I guess that's
they've got Leicester at home coming very soon. It's a very big match. I was really interested in this.
If they don't win that game, but you realize that it's kind of works the way, because if they don't win it, then it's
Leicester as well. I mean, look, I listened to Peter Schmeichel talking on the TV the other day, and I found it really interesting that he talked about games that he'd looked back on during the course of winning a Premier League. And he said some of the results that were at the time seen as pivotal didn't matter. We ended up going on and winning the league. We just compensated with a game that somebody said we couldn't win. And that generally does happen year in, year out, involving relegation as well. If you look at Sunderland's and Leicester's and what they did in previous seasons, I can go back watching West Ham going on a ridiculous run and having to go to Old Trafford and winning. You know, we can't just dismiss every team.
Scoring?
Yeah, I think it's 50-50 out of them and Man City. Yeah.
Leicester's still getting no love whatsoever. Can you help, Rory? Maybe even Spurs, who, let's all laugh at Spurs. Ha, 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 how funny. They're only 2 points back.
I think it is 40% Arsenal, 40% City. Yeah. I think the other 20% is split between Leicester and Tottenham.
Would you say, where's the evidence of Leicester falling apart?
The evidence will come when all of a sudden there's pressure on them, when they are 7-8 games to go and you're thinking they have got Sunderland at home. I don't know if they've got Sunderland home or not. And think, God, this is a must-win game if we're going to win.
Well,
and all of a sudden the pressure goes right up to the roof.
Well, I don't know it. Why would they be under pressure? There's no...
Exactly.
They're in a position that they must be dreaming of. It must be great to go training today.
I'm sure it is.
Leicester have got a really hard February. So
they don't.
Yeah.
They don't, though, because it's Liverpool.
No, they could beat Liverpool. Yeah, Man City and Arsenal away.
What I was going to say was that on paper, they have a really hard February. I agree. Liverpool, City and Arsenal are not quite the titans that we all think they are. But they will drop points in February, there's no question about that. What might work for Leicester, because I think Stowey's right to an extent that I think if they were leading with 5-6 games to go, they might suddenly kind of buckle. But I think what might work for Leicester to make them...
It's not Liverpool, not win it, Rory.
No, but to make them contenders, if they do drop points in February and the others sort of go 2 or 3 points ahead, then the pressure's completely off Leicester.
They've got the top goal scorer at the moment. They've got the third best assist in Mahrez. They've got two central defenders who have absolutely been rock solid, conceded 23 goals all season. They've got a goalkeeper who hasn't even been called upon hardly.
And you haven't even mentioned their best player this season.
Well, you could go from Drinkwater to Kante.
There you go. We need to talk about Chelsea. 14 points off of fourth place, 15 games to go. John Terry was asked if a top four finish is doable.
No, I don't think so.
But if it's 15 games, if you just work it out, they've got to win 5 games, and whoever's fourth, Tottenham, got to lose 5 games just for them to catch up.
Right, but you look at some of the, you look at some of the really distinctly unimpressive teams ahead of them, and I don't know.
Are Chelsea in that great form that they? Yeah, it's a fantastic result for them yesterday. Don't get me wrong, but
they're not. But you know,
when you do the maths of trying to spin it and saying them winning, and you know, if Tottenham had a great second part of the season, then they've got another 3 or 4 points to catch up on the ones above them. It's the Cities and Arsenal. So no, I think Tottenham will easily match Chelsea on points.
All right. Start thinking about this, because I will ask you this later. How many Spurs, I'm going to ask Goey this specifically. If you were the Glazers and you bought Spurs and absorbed them into the United team, how many Spurs players would get into a combined best 11? Don't tell me now. Think about it.
Probably about 9.
There you go. Right off the bat. And that's terrifying. And is one of them De Gea? You'd still take De Gea over Lloris?
Yeah.
Which is obviously very close. West Ham and Manchester City. Now, this is, I thought this was interesting because I looked at this and people are saying, oh, look, City dropped points. I mean, they're playing West Ham away. This is the same City team where we go and we complain about, like, you know, the defending is bad and Yaya Torre's, you know, is kind of like flickers on and off and whatever else. This is a good result, right?
Yeah, West Ham are a really good side, and you know he's got a lot going there, Bilic. Where you just, I didn't think they'd win before the game. When I was looking at it, I thought, do you know what? It'd be a tough game for them to win there. Upton Park, you know, they move the ball really quickly, and I think City conceding goals. I know you said there that down the middle, but they are poor. They will concede from central position. Joe Hart's pulled a save out, Dimitri Payet out the top draw to stop them losing the game.
West Ham are a good side.
Yeah.
If they get everyone fit, they're a good side.
Well, Rory, you went to see your mate, Adrian, into this piece about goalkeepers in the Premier League, which, you know, actually, I'll just be brutally honest. All those stats at the beginning, did EA Sports or whoever sponsored it make you put them in?
No, but it just illustrates that by certain gauges, Adrian is up there.
No, but it's just that they were just kind of stupid, meaningless, really bad, like, shave percentage shots. It's not serious analytics. But the rest of the piece was really good.
Feel free to continue.
But you agree with me, right?
Goalkeepers, it's very hard to get really sort of meaningful numbers on goalkeepers. There's no question about that. But I think save percentage is probably the best gauge. And the others were kind of dressed up as a weight of evidence. I agree. I'm not saying any of them are conclusive. But
Liverpool ended up with Mignolet.
Yes, it is. That's true.
What did he talk to you? Did you guys just talk boring goalkeeper stuff, or did he talk to you about Payet as well?
He talked a little bit about Payet, yep.
To me, he seems to be just on another level.
I like the way with Payet that West Ham, I think it was David Gold who actually sort of first alerted West Ham to Dimitri Payet. And you're getting this story of kind of, oh, you know, it's great to have an owner who really knows his European football and who really pays attention to up-and-coming young stars, right? Dimitri Payet was 28, and he had more assists than anybody else in Europe, which, again, is not necessarily a particularly meaningful statistic, but it's the sort of number that you look at, and every club in the top six, every club across Europe should have looked and thought, Dimitri Payet has more assists than anybody else. I wonder if he's any good. And it could be that it's a fluke. Like, it's possible that it's a fluke. Like,
well, or it could be a Bielsa effect. I think the reason people are scared off, though, Rory, is the fact that he has a reputation, historically, as being...
For being troublesome,
And a bit volatile.
But it just reminds me of the Papis Sissé and Johan Dubai thing at Newcastle, where Newcastle get all this credit for signing the captain of the French champion and the second leading scorer in the Bundesliga. And it's as though they'd gone into the jungles of Vietnam and found the world's greatest footballer. I agree with you. The reputation has always been relatively bad with Payet. But if you go through a lot of those incidents, there's kind of, not mitigating circumstances, but they're at least explicable. He's obviously just quite a sort of strong character.
Right. Well, and it's also, he's not at 28, the same guy he was at 22,
no, exactly.
23.
Yeah, exactly.
Cass.
My boy, he must be become a scout, my boy, he lives in France. And 2.5-3 years ago, he said, Dad, what's the
boy? You're referring to your son here.
Yeah, my son.
When you say my boy,
son.
Like, it's not some sort of lingo.
He's a Marseille
like,
fan. Okay. And he said to me, Dad, you've got to see this lad Payet play. He's unbelievable. So I got a few clips of him and watched him, and and thought, yeah, he's got something very different. But I saw him play in many different positions. I didn't just see him play like he did for West Ham. You'd sometimes see him just on a off-wide position. I've even seen him play centre-forward for Marseille. And he was brilliant in that position as well. And I tell you what came out from the weekend. You think that City have spent 50 million on De Bruyne and 50-odd million in Sterling, and they ain't got as much as him. I really don't believe they're as good as complete as he is as a player.
Scorey's making a face.
He's a very good. I've seen Paye. I've actually a good friend of mine is a coach for the under 21s at West Ham. And when he first came over, what's the Europa League? They have to qualify in the summer for West Ham played. And you've never seen anyone like it for technical ability and everything. De Bruyne. And
wait, so do you really say he's never seen anything?
He said his ability wise in training. He said for the first 3 or 4 weeks when I had him, and nobody really expected. They just thought he's a signing. Hopefully he'll do well.
Right.
And
all your friend wasn't there when Paolo Di Canio was there, was he? At West Ham.
No,
or Trevor Brooking. Yeah. I mean, it was probably not. But okay, just check.
How old do you think Scully's friends are if they were there? Trevor Brooking was there.
Football started in 92, Gab. You know, where's this?
And this is the fun of live podcasts. Tony Cascarino is leaving us. Might you be back? Maybe?
No, I've got to go, Gab.
But it's been
the pleasure I left you with to start picking on James on about previous great West Ham players.
Your friend's never... It's just weird when your friend says he's never seen anybody. Does he own a television?
He's 30 years old. He's a very talented coach. And he said, you have to
How old is he?
30 years old.
Okay.
He's a future. He said, you have to see this boy Paye play.
Because he's never seen anything like
him. He said, in training, he said, I couldn't believe I've never seen anything as good as this man.
Okay, so why were you making a face when he was when Cass was praising Paye?
I think Kevin De Bruyne has been an excellent signing for Man City.
You think he's a better player than Paye?
I think you'll get more out of him. I'm not quite sure of the shelf life of Paye.
Can I say something about West Ham, please? Is that allowed?
Yes.
First of all, so Adrian's a really nice bloke.
You always say like about he's what a nice guy he is.
No, he's a lovely man.
And it doesn't bother you that he wears tights? It
doesn't bother me in the slightest. Like, some of my best friends wear tights.
Yeah.
My wife wears tights. I think there's something's been lost a little bit in the kind of constant sort of diet of like, oh, everything's a crisis all the time, you can't drop points, as soon as you drop points, it's terrible. There are certain grounds where a point is a good result, just whatever the circumstances, whatever the result, whatever the outcome, a draw is a good result to get.
Well, and does that change, though, when you look at the way the way that goal was conceded with Otamendi and off the throw?
Oh, yeah, look, but we know City are flawed. Like, we know that they do switch off a bit. We know that they have weaknesses. We know that you can get at them. We know that they don't turn on every week. We know all that stuff. That's the only reason that they've got a 40% chance of winning the title rather than like an 80% chance of winning the title, because for all that Arsenal has been the best side this season, City on paper should be walking away with it. But I don't think you can criticise them too much for drawing at West Ham. You can pinpoint errors in how they got that draw. But the outcome, it's not a bad result for them at all.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's pinpoint errors here in this, okay? I'm Sheikh Mansour. No, actually, because he probably wouldn't get it. I'll be Khaldun al-Mubarak. And okay. I'm asking myself, all right, so I got all these good attacking players, and I go into the season with Mangala, with all his issues, De Michelis, who's older than Scoey, and definitely older than Scoey's friend at West Ham. This guy Otamendi, who's like presented to me like he's... he's kind of Bobby Moore, Franco Baresi, and Godzilla rolled into one. And he certainly has the look.
Trevor Brooking.
But when I actually dig a little bit, I kind of see that, you know, he's like 28, however old he was, 26 at the time. But he's kind of like mid-career. And he's really only had a couple seasons where he's been good. And I have to pay an arm and a leg for him. Might I not kind of wonder what's going on here? Like, why couldn't... Oh, and then I have Company, who seems to have congenital injury issues. This is a major letdown, isn't it?
Yeah, I think...
Like, it's just really, really, really bad.
I think it's bad recruitment at the prices they've paid, certainly. I don't think that any of those are bad players. So, Company, obviously, you're going to have to write off. City have got the same issue with Company as Liverpool have with Sturridge. They're caught in that difficult position where... And it's genuinely difficult. I think there needs to be more understanding of it. Of what do you do in that situation? Do you say, we're going to assume he's not going to be fit? Or do you say, right, we're going to assume that at some point he will be fit, so we can't replace him with a £40 million central defender?
But they did, because they signed Otamendi.
No, I think Otamendi was brought in basically because the thinking was that De Michelis was no longer useful if he ever had been.
Roy, this is my thing, right? At £40 million, I want a guy who's going to be a leader, not just be a really good defender, right? So
yeah,
when
absolutely.
It becomes obvious that Company's going to miss most of the season, at that point, I would expect Nicolas Otamendi to step up, right?
But you know what
annoys me a little bit about the way we sort of manufacture our stars, right? You know, look at how many caps for Argentina, how many Argentina caps Nicolas Otamendi actually has. You realize it's not that many for a 40 million, again, I don't have these numbers off the top of my head, but given that Argentina have kind of had a crisis at center back for a long, long time, and you would expect this dude to have 50, 60 caps, right? But he doesn't.
Yep. No. Nope.
There's got to be a reason why.
And so in terms of the price, Jab, I everything you said is right. Do you not think, obviously there's a City tax, because City have got a lot of money, so foreign clubs charge them more, fine. There's a Premier League tax, so foreign clubs charge all of them more, fine. Real Madrid were in for Otamendi as well, so that drives up the price a little bit more, fine. George Mendes was involved, that drives up the price even more, fine. But do you not think as well that there is a genuine issue, once you go past Thiago Silva and people like that, with centre-backs that are available for sale, there's not that many who are that good.
No, I completely disagree with that. And unfortunately,
I know you do, but you're wrong.
No, I'm definitely very, very right on this one. And I just think it's one of those sort of perception issues. And I agree with you on the tax and the things that drove up the situation. By the same token, this was one situation where Valencia had spent something like 170 million euros, like 140 million, 130 million pounds, something absurd, close to that. Something absurd, right? Peter Lim obviously was going to needed to get his money back. In that situation, you can force a deal because you have them over a barrel. They have to sell.
Yeah.
They have no choice but to sell. And Otamendi wanted to come. You know, that should be the situation that kind of works the other way around, if you know how to play it. I don't know. I think there's a lot more to this deal and why it happened and how it happened than meets the eye. But that may be an argument, a discussion for a different time.
There is also, and where I suspect we can find common ground, there is also City's recruitment, has, certainly in defence, has not been particularly good.
They need to employ a certain Rory Smith with his...
Well, I'm amazed that no one's poached Mark Rotti to be director of football, to be honest.
I don't think that the kind of clubs that would poach me can afford me. And the kind of clubs who can afford me don't want me. Let's move on to our debate this week. Background to this is, on Friday, UEFA's executive committee approved goal line technology for the European Championships and also for the Champions League. And they're actually going to go and... They're going to pay to install it, because you know some of these small grounds, obviously it's expensive, and if I'm in Cyprus or whatever, you know, be like, can I afford this? And no, UEFA will go and pay for this. Now that means, but they're going to keep the additional assistant referees. I'm kind of happy when stuff like this happens, because Rory, I'm one of the people who said all along, both are very, very good ideas, and I think it's idiotic and self-serving that until not that long ago, they were seen as mutually exclusive, largely because you had Sepp Blatter on one side and Michel Platini on the other. Am I a little bit right or extremely right?
I think you're right. I've never had a problem with the extra assistant referee system. I think that, but then I don't know, and not that I'm trying to dress myself as being different. I'm not that uncomfortable with there being a degree of error in football. I don't think that necessarily everything has to be scientifically proven all the time. I understand why everybody wants it and all that stuff, but it genuinely isn't something that really bothers me, especially because largely the really high profile video technology incidents tend to be in to England's detriment, and I find that moderately hilarious. Yeah, no, I think that the assistant referee's plan is fine. I think they do more than they're given credit for, and I think to an extent the reason they were so kind of scorned in this country is because they were a UEFA suggestion rather than anybody else. I think for high-profile tournament, there's no reason not to have video technology. Again, I can see the argument of you've got to have kind of consistency throughout every level, but then kind of do you really? That's not really how it works. It's not like at Sunday League level, expect Premier League conditions. There's a lot of kind of false thinking and problem finding that goes on with this.
Scully, the only thing that gets me a little bit about goal line technology is it's kind of like, ooh, the cameras are there and the light goes on, and you know, with the eye, you're not really sure, but hey, it says that it's a goal, so it must be a goal. How long before this happens in the Premier League? Because I think they've done a very good job of kind of steering the debate. Oh no, it'll cost money and we need to train more referees and whatever. But I mean, I can think of, there's a whole bunch of incidents that obviously would have clearly been, we could have avoided this season in the Premier League with the use of additional assistant referees.
It's where do you put those assistant referees? I'm not a fan of how they do it at the back of the goals or the side of the goals. I don't really see them making too many decisions, really. You know, I'm with Rory as well. I don't think we should get too advanced too early. I think it will slowly come in. I think the goal line technology has been a plus. I think the next stage is just to have somebody in a studio with, you know, a referee has a mic, which they're doing, who can just feed information into him. If you did it without people knowing...
You know, that's what the additional... That's what they do now. They're mic'd up to each other and the people behind the goal...
Yeah, but if you had someone watching a TV, there's definitely a logic to that.
But then you go back to stage one, which is you'd be watching whatever the TV director decides he should watch.
No, but if you put a time, if there's like a 3 second, so yesterday when Mertesacker fouls Costa, Klassenberg runs over, he steps away, he does what every good referee does, he just gives himself 4 or 5 seconds just to run it through. In those 4 or 5 seconds, you could have somebody saying, yeah, it's a red.
And also, in terms of the issue of the directorial cuts and the sort of subconscious or subliminal editing of a game, if you look at what the NBA does, they have that system where all of the feeds feed back to a central location, I think in New York or New Jersey, where there are a team of people watching every single game in the NBA, and they can make that decision based on, I think, 14 different feeds, 9 of which, or 7 of which, or 8 of which, or something, are the TV feeds, but they also have access to other in-stadium feeds. Now, obviously, basketball, like all American sports, is different. They're more used to kind of breaking play and all that stuff. But football has to make a choice. You can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as Voltaire once said.
Right, I just the thing which just kind of bugs me about this is that so few people have really taken a look at the logistics. I take your point with basketball, and as you're saying, and I completely agree with you, Rory, the perfect is the enemy of the good and all this jazz. But there is really solid data of the impact that additional assistant referees behind the goal have had. The fact that, you know, in terms of things like shirt pulling on set pieces, in terms of simply having a different vantage point, like on the incident yesterday, Klattenberg was looking from one side, and had there been a guy behind a goal, or Peter Cech in goal was looking from the other direction, right? Could you replicate that with cameras? Sure, you could, and I think maybe that's what we're going to do if ultimately we have instant replay and whatever else. But in the meantime, you have a real-time sentient being who's there to help the match official and is constantly talking to him.
And there's no question, as I said, I don't think anyone's arguing, except maybe Scully, the additional assistants have, I don't think they've been a bad thing at all. And in many ways, given the employment crisis that Europe's facing, maybe we should have as many referees as possible just so that, just to solve kind of unemployment issues. There comes a point where it's a bit silly to kind of just throw in extra bodies and loads of extra bodies when you could, you do have the technology available, and that's always the argument. The technology exists. If football is prepared to have a few extra seconds of delay in decision-making to make sure that everything is right, then football has to make the decision, football in general, I suppose, the football family have to make the decision whether they are prepared to do that. In the meantime, the additional assistant referees, yeah, they're a good thing. And there's no question that if the English had come up with that idea, then the English would support it. And the only reason they don't is because it was UEFA. No question about that at all.
Right. I might admit that in the NBA, they also have 3 referees already covering a much, much smaller... much smaller court. And by the way, you may be wondering why we don't spend a lot of time talking about Manchester United and Mourinho and all this jazz and Van Gaal. Well, it's because we're taping on Monday morning, and we thought that Maybe Van Gaal would be seeking alternative employment right now. We could talk about that. But that hasn't happened as of this taping. So hence, you get goal line technology and additional assistant referees. Enjoy them in the Champions League next year and the European Championships this summer.
Can't wait.
You're excited, aren't you? Right, how about some quick hits? Scully's old team, Leicester City, pummel Stoke 3-0. Danny Drinkwater is called the English Pirlo by one Christian Fuchs, who, of course, is the Christian the devil warned you about. And guess what? There are 3 points clear at the top. Rory, have you joined the ranks of the believers? To what degree do you have king power?
Nice, nice. As I said before, I think they do have a chance of winning the title. I think we have to accept that now. I think it's now very difficult for them not to be in the Champions League next season. They'd have to have like a real collapse not to be in the Champions League. Whether they'll win the league is a different matter, but regardless, they've done English football a power of good, Leicester City, a king power of good.
There you go. And I think a lot of it is because of that British spine that they have, undoubtedly.
I think part of it is because of their massive German centre-half. Who's been brilliant this season, Robert Huth. Been absolutely brilliant.
I think all the stars are aligning for Leicester City. By the way, if you want to go and humiliate some of the regulars on this program, go back to, I think it was October or November, when a vast majority said that Chelsea would finish higher than Leicester in the league. Tottenham Hotspur defeat Crystal Palace, Scully's other old team, 3-1. But it's Dele Alli who steals the show with the Worthington-esque goal. Scully, can you talk us through it? And tell us how difficult it really is. Because I have a feeling that you've probably done stuff like this in training or maybe in your back garden playing against six-year-olds as like a fully-fledged adult. But what did this entail?
Well, the first of all, it entails a lot of composure to do something like that. What you don't realise is when you watch football, you don't realise the speed that the game is played until you're actually on the pitch. So to actually have the composure and just focus on your first touch, your second touch, and then getting your technique right with the volley, the lad deserves a lot of credit. He's just going from strength to strength, isn't he? And it says here, Worthington Escol, you know, it was against one of my former clubs, Ipswich as well. Probably goal of the season.
Twilight Zone stuff at Carrow Road, where Liverpool win 5-4 after conceding an equaliser and scoring a winner in injury time. Rory, Jurgen Klopp enjoyed it so much he jumped around like a maniac and broke his glasses, and then made a joke about how he couldn't find his second spare pair of glasses because he'd broken his original pair, and ha-ha-ha-ha, we all laugh. On a more serious note, should he be so happy given that he just conceded 4 goals against Norwich, against Mbokani and Naismith?
Well, look, so there's two things here. One is, first of all, it was a good game in the sense that it was entertaining. It was deeply embarrassing for everyone concerned. I don't think either team should take a huge amount of pride from that performance. But at the same time, and I saw on Twitter, having watched the game, lots of people kind of mocking the players and Klopp for celebrating so much and for being so kind of over kind of enthusiastic in the celebrations. As a football fan, if you can't why a team would behave like that having won in those circumstances, you're doing football wrong. So let's have a little bit of joy. It was dramatic.
A bit of joy. I think that's a disconnect. As a neutral, it was absolutely dramatic and you're up out of your seat. And I think it's one of those things where you look back on the cold, hard light of day. I was on a show with a very dejected Liverpool fan, one Stevie Nicol, who basically said it was absolutely horrendous.
Oh, it's like looking back on a really good night out that you've had where you've done something embarrassing, isn't it? It's the same feeling.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know that, Rory.
Yeah. More dire stuff from Manchester United, who lose 1-0 at home to Southampton. Louis van Gaal even seems to talk in the past tense now. It's been reported that he's gone to Holland for some reason, but it's also been reported that he'll come back. Scully, a lot went on this weekend. Do you have any clever theories as to why he has a job and Mourinho is unemployed?
Well, there's the obvious one, that a family 5,000 miles away called the Glaziers are totally incapable of running the football club.
They're Glaziers, not Glaziers. Glaziers are people called, who go in, like, Glazier window.
Right, well, they're not a family that go around practising their name, Gab, to be honest with you. Are totally incapable of running the football club is probably the best theory.
Wait, so you blame the Glaziers more than you blame Woody?
Yeah.
Really?
This is
interesting. Sorry, I'm trying to digress.
I don't actually.
Do you really think the Glazers are sitting there and being like, "Yeah, man, that Louis van Gaal, we got to keep him around"? Do you really think?
Well, what are they doing then?
I would assume that it's Ed Woodward who advises them, and
so
tells
who
them
employed Ed Woodward. You employed Ed Woodward.
Okay, so it's a little bit like, I don't know anything about electrics, right? So I call an electrician to go and wire my home, and the house sets and the house catches on fire because he does it incorrectly and he's an incompetent fool. And then you would blame me, right, rather than my electrician.
No, but that's not a perfect parallel, Dad, because what Stowey's saying is quite right.
Ed Woodward doesn't know anything about football, so why go and employ Ed Woodward?
The Blazers haven't employed an electrician. Their electrics have gone wrong, so they've employed a mechanic.
That's a good point. That is a far more apt analogy. Now, it's three wins on the spin for Southampton, who are now up to eighth place. Crisis over. Rory, can we put Ronald Koeman back among the candidate for the next big job that opens up? And how pleased are you for your mate, Charlie Austin?
No, we can't. I think Koeman, in answer to your first question, Koeman is a good manager, but he's not a Chelsea manager or a Manchester United manager or anything like that, although it would be hilarious if he succeeded Van Gaal. I'm delighted Southampton are sort of back on the straight and narrow. They're still a great club, still very well run, still a lot other people can learn from them. Charlie Austin, good header, that's what he'll do. Gets your goals, doesn't he? Gets your goals.
There you go. Scully, I'm going to ask you about this because even though Rory was at this game, but Swansea win at Everton as Francesco Guidolin makes his debut on the Swans bench. John Stones had a bit of a stinker, not for the first time, and yet I read in the papers that he's supposedly a £50 million target for every big club out there. Can you please explain this?
There's two thoughts in there. Yes, he did have a stinker because he was at fault for the first goal, really. And we've seen several errors like that. And I'm not quite sure. You know, Jamie Carragher, I don't know if you saw it or... No, it was Graham Souness, I do apologise. Hit the nail on the head. He said, when I see the lad, I'd love to ask him who he looks up to and who he models his game on.
Because it's not Phil Jagielka.
No. And it's not John Terry.
It's not Sylvain Distin either.
No. So who, you know, he's a defender. Okay, he's technically good and he's ball, but that comes second. You defend first and then your technique, your ability comes second. But he seems to have this sort of, you know, I'm going to try and dictate play from the back and have 55 touches on the ball when I get it. There's no need. You know, you're going to make
mistakes
like that. Didn't
Souness play with Alan Hansen, who was known as a bit of a passer at the back?
He'd pass the ball forward. I'm sure he wouldn't do a Cruyff turn in his own penalty box and try and... Yeah, the goalkeeper, you have it when I'm 5 yards away and you've got a centre-forward bearing down on you.
Rory, stick up for the ball-playing centre-back, please.
Take Stowey and Souness's point. I think Stones, to an extent, is a product of his environment. I think that's what English academies, and Stowey will know this, I think there has definitely been a drive in academies to tell defenders they have to do that. It was quite interesting yesterday, twice, the first one was midway through the first half, the second one midway through the second half, where Stones came out from the back with the ball. And he looks very elegant, he's very graceful. And the problem was that no one was moving in front of him, so he didn't have a natural pass on. But the fans got really, really agitated with him, specifically with him, not with the team, with him. And I think there is a frustration amongst not just Everton fans, but probably kind of more fans than that, that there is this kind of prioritisation of looking elegant in possession and looking for, you know, bringing the ball out. Occasionally, you kind of just want your defenders to be defenders, and I think that annoys them a little bit. And I do have sympathy with it. He's got huge potential. But a lot of it is still just potential.
Gab, one for you. Juventus took on Roma in Serie A, looking to make it 11 wins in a row. How did it work out for them?
It worked out extremely well for them, and they needed the win because Napoli had previously won 4-2 at Sampdoria with Gonzalo Higuain making it 21 league goals in 21 league games. It was a tight affair. It was a testy affair. Roma quite defensive under Spalletti, but in the end, Paulo Dybala, the difference maker. If you haven't had a chance to see this guy, go watch him because you can get Pogba in the same game, so it's kind of like a 2-for-1. But he's really one of the most exciting, mature attacking talents out there right now.
And your tip for Serie A is?
Well, I went against Juve. My tip was Roma. I might
Napoli. Did Napoli have a chance? I still love Napoli in the 80s with Maradona.
Well, then you'll love them now because they have Insigne, who's little like Maradona, and they have Higuain, who scores a bazillion goals.
How's Shalaba doing at Napoli?
He's not really playing.
Yeah, he's had a couple substitute appearances. Right, that's all we've got time for this week. Hope you enjoyed this As Live taping with all the excitement of Tony Cascarino leaving the room. Many, many thanks to my guest today, Rory K. Smith, who made the effort of joining us from far away using some sort of mobile telephony. James Scowcroft, who made the effort of coming in from his home in... Is it Bury St. Edmunds or some far, far away place east? And where there's always traffic, right, when you come into town? Always. always.
Today was particularly a bad game, if you mean.
Thank you. And thanks also to Tony Cascarino.
So it's okay if you, you know, you live in Mayfair, so, you know, you just have to struggle.
I don't live in Mayfair. I live in Kensington. And my thanks to Tony Cascarino, who has left the room. You can press that subscribe button. We're going to be back next week. Now, I won't be here next week because I am away, but I'm sure you'll have a very competent...
Get Max Rushton back. He's very good.
Hopefully, exactly. It's going to be...
He's excellent.
Hopefully it's going to be Max Rushton, so that...
We all hope every week it's going to be Max Rushton.
Yes.
It flies. The programme is so smooth and fun.
He's a real professional, isn't he, Joey?
It's a real deal.
But anyway, Max Rushton, will he be back? We don't know, because our producer, Dave McGuire...
He doesn't know either.
No. So you can press that subscribe button and get us delivered to your iPad or similar device every single week. And remember... You can also get exclusive football highlights free as part of your subscription. So if you don't like Match of the Day, whatever the program is called in your place, you can just watch them on a mobile device if you have a Times subscription. It's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. Till next time, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.